This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Well, welcome back, Indie Comic Book Noise listeners. We're doing a special bonus episode that may come out as a regularly numbered episode or not. I've yet to decide. But I wanted to jump on quickly. And Whirlwind X, Kevin, decided to join me for a little con talk on this episode of Indie Comic Book Noise. Indie Comic Book Noise is part of the Deliberate Noise Network. We can be found online at IndieComicBookNoise.com for past episodes. Find us on the Twitter, Indie Comic Book N. You can also contact Kevin and I directly on Twitter through our individual Twitter handles. As you heard at the beginning of the show, we may have some strong language, but generally I feel like we're pretty chill people between the two of us. Say hi, Kevin.
Hello. Yeah, I enjoy some con talk.
Yeah, we're part of the Deliberate Noise Network, so you can catch those other shows as well. And you hear Kevin and I frequently on one of those Deliberate Noise Network shows, Marvel Noise in particular. And there's lots of other great. Derek, the grand master of all, runs his flagship show on the network, Comic Book Noise. But I recently attended the Long Beach Comic Book Expo.
You know, I confused this with the other show.
That's very, very understandable. Originally, the Long Beach show started in the fall, and that show continued. And then a couple years back, they started launching a spring show that they call the Expo, which is now a two-day show. And it's, you know, early February, so it's about 6 months out. And it's just it's a two-day show. I think I really enjoy it, but I really think it's a one-day show. And it's basically a lot of local people, plus a couple of good names. Like, they got Rick Leonardi was there, Ron Mars, Jerry Conway, you know, a few bigger names.
Yeah.
Dan DiDio was there Sunday. I went Saturday, so I did not see him. So that's a nice part. And then, you know, your basic regular local people who are selling their comics and back issues and all that there. Of course, Harley Yee is there. Kevin.
He's like on every show.
Is there a show he doesn't go to?
I don't know. I don't know if I've been to a regular comic show he wasn't at.
Because it's not like the Long Beach Expo is like their fall show this year is going to be 3 days. So this is the smaller of the two shows. And they had, I think, not a lot of floor space. They had a couple of programming rooms. I caught a little bit of one panel about Captain Marvel. They had a Jerry Conway and Margaret Stoll on a panel talking about, you know, Miss Marvel and how she changed to Captain Marvel. And with the upcoming movie, that was a big promotion currently. But I went there to see some friends and walk the floor. And because Rick Leonardi was there, I did pick up a page of original art, Kevin, from a title you may recall, a certain Spider-Man 2099.
Send that here.
I got page 7 from issue 1. There is no superheroes on it, but it's a beautiful, Rick Leonardi and Al Williamson. And what I like is it's like a big building all along the left side of the panel.
Yeah. Does someone say shock?
And then there are inserts panels kind of on the right side, but they're put in the building. It's just very eye-catching. And all the, like, at the bottom, the people are just sort of gestural ink lines. And then there are swirl. It's just really, I think it's a very eye-catching panel to me. In fact, it's one of the few pages I immediately came home and hung it up, because most of mine sit in portfolios, but there's just something about it. He did have one page from Marvel Comics Presents that did have superheroes on it, which I also was looking at, but I was limiting myself to one page, and I had to go with this one. It was just so eye-catching. and Lila. Yeah, I'm not a... I was thinking at the time I should do a big Spider-Man 2099 deep dive to refresh my recollection. Kevin, is that a title you read a lot of at the time or gone back to?
Read the entire run. It was weird that certain books, like I'll just, unless there's a reason to jump off, I just keep on reading.
Yeah, I remember when it launched, but by the time I was kind of out of comics and it was still going. So it was right starting around the time I was just getting out of comics, but I do remember the launch of it, which is weird because you'd think I would have been all over it because I believe Pat Mills worked on the Punisher 2099 book.
Didn't he work on Doom?
Maybe it was Doom he worked on, but by the time that stuff was going, I think I was taking a break to get out of comic books just for normally the boring reason of fiscal reasons. And those days, if there were digital comics, I didn't know about them in 93. And they were not available. There weren't really a lot in libraries. And I found that when budget cuts had to come, comics were the first thing to get cut.
But you hung on to those dreads, right? You were like, oh, Pat Mills, he's on dread.
Well, it was martial law that I kept every few years. I would keep going into stores and seeing if they had new martial law to keep me in the hobby. But that's what I kept going. I did want to say I picked up a couple of local books too. I don't know if the guy, but I shouldn't say local, maybe they're not local, but two books which I will review later on another show. But Out of Order number one and Five from Beyond were two books, because I always try and buy a few smaller publish local, what's the term, what are we using when a guy's selling his own books? Non-gender guy. Like one was a husband-wife team.
Like a small press or comics with an X or micro press? Like, does that cover it?
I guess. I never know. Because basically these are people sell. I mean, they have little publishers on them, but they're selling their own books at their own table type of thing.
It's funny that the one that I brought up with the Kickstarter, the Secret Voice, it's in Previews magazine now, so that was cool. Like, I noticed a lot of those, like, if you have enough audience for like a Kickstarter, you've done well enough, you know, you can usually transition into the Previews catalog after.
Yes, I've learned that if it's a particularly if it's a big name, I remember Amy Reeder did a Halloween book that I kickstarted and ended up on Image. And now I know if it's a really big name, there's a chance it's going to end up getting picked up by a publisher, because it shows there's interest in the book and the person has, you know, enough jam to get it kickstarted. So there's something there. I also picked up, thanks to Steve's recommendation at Ron Mars's table, I picked up Turok 1 and 2. And Ron informed me that I was likely the first person in North America to buy issue 2, because it hadn't come out yet officially. It was coming out, you know, the Wednesday after, and I bought this on the Saturday morning, so I got it a few days ahead of schedule for people. I hope I didn't get Ron in trouble by announcing that.
You could have been banging on the internet horn there telling everyone about the issue.
That's not really my brand, is spoiling things for people. I feel like that seems silly to do that.
Yeah.
And I don't want to ruin anything for someone who's like, oh, I really am looking forward to getting my hands on that. So Turok 1 and 2 signed by Ron, and that was just a fun little way. And then had lunch with Parks and Cons on Twitter and YouTube. Talked about them a lot. If you like Convention San Diego and those things, you should already be following them. They cover everything and do wall-to-wall YouTube videos and exclusives, and will get you through everything.
Yeah, I don't know. How did they do that many cons?
Yeah, I don't know either. They are constantly going. It was his birthday that day, so I brought him a few little some classic comics that Andy likes to give. I don't know if you remember, a few years ago DC had those little cereal box comics, and I love those mini comics. We talked about them on the show. June Brigman was the artist on one, so I gave him that complete set and a few other old DC books and variant cover Marvels and silliness like that. Always fun stuff out there in the world. And then I also had hung out a lot with Bob Breetall, Comic Spectrum, the Guinness record. I always give him a few comics from my collection so they can reside in the official Guinness collection. And I had a lot of fun, thanks to you, Kevin.
Oh, yeah. I was like, wow, I sent you on a massive journey there, it looked like.
One of our off-mic, off-air discussions, you had mentioned how you're enjoying collecting Thunderbolt first appearances. So I set myself the task to go and see what I could collect. Now, on the way home, I was regretting I didn't really look for Thunderbolts number one. And I think I should have. But I don't know, for some reason it didn't, even though I know it's Jolt's first appearance. I don't know. And I already have the Hulk 449. And I looked a little bit for one, but I think that late 90s wasn't, this might not have been the show for that. Most of the show, I feel, is the newer stuff or Silver Age.
Well, some of the print runs on stuff are lower during that time period.
Well, I just think also people didn't bring a lot of that there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you can only bring so many boxes. So you're going to bring your Silver Age for sure. And then you're going to bring your hot newer books. And then some people do bring random boxes of stuff where you're like, really? You put this on a truck and drove it here? you're looking at completely kind of a smattering of just hand, you know, like they have 8 Hulk books and 10 Wonder Woman books and 15 of it, you know, just that random collection, and you don't really see why that was. And you're like, is this just someone's long boxes?
I always try to bring a few weird indie books whenever I'm vending, just in case.
I mean, basically a lot of silver, and that makes sense. Like, you can always throw Silver Age up, and I'm keys. And I think I mentioned on Twitter that my favorite had to be the first Peter Porker someone was trying to sell for $125.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is anybody really Star Comics? That's what. But Bob and Sean, I think he's only the Valiant on Twitter. He was a Valiant guy. That I hung out with those two, and they helped me on some of the grading. Because for some of these books, I had some options. You can get more than one of, you know, and so it's like, oh, do I spend a little extra for a nicer condition or go, you know, save money and get a beat up condition? And that was fun. But yeah, I didn't really see a lot of 90s books. And I didn't do a ton of looking for that Hulk because, like I said, I already had one. I was mainly focused on Melissa, which you had warned me is very difficult to find.
Yes.
She appears in Marvel 2-in-1. She has no dialogue. She's unnamed. But she appears as one of the grapplers. And I could find the issue before and the issue after. So just like you said, like, you'll go and there'll be the one before. And I found multiples of, like, the one right after. And I don't think there's any, I don't know if there's some other reason. Have you? But it was just weird. Like, a guy had almost the whole run except that one.
I know.
So that was, it was just funny. So I couldn't find that. And I really looked. Like I said, the Thunderbolts number one, I didn't really spend any time looking for, which I regret. I did, I picked up Atlas, which is Avengers 21. I got a variant, what I think, I mean, I'm getting reader copies, but that was a $12 book, which I thought was eminently fair for Avengers 21. And then, obviously, the first Moonstone, Captain America 192. Now, this is obviously way before She's Moonstone. That was a $2 book. You know, what am I going to do? I could have gotten a nicer copy, but I felt, I don't know. What's your take on, are you looking to get good grades on these, Kevin, or you just want a copy? What's your take on these Thunderbolts? Should I be looking? Should I have spent the $10 on a nicer copy?
First, Carla, like, I don't find it's a big deal. What I would get a nice copy on would be First Moonstone when she's in costume.
Oh, I didn't look that up. Which one's that?
That's like, what is that? Like 228 Hulk or something?
And then First Zemo. Now that one I had to spend $5 on. Again, I was thinking, should I go spend, you know, get one of the nice copies? But I like, I don't know. I just wanted, currently I'm just getting reader copies.
So yeah.
We'll see if we upgrade. And that was Captain America and the Falcon, which is Captain America 168. And everyone likes that because we all remember the Power Record that came out about that issue. And I think Steve has talked about that on Marvel Noise. But you can go to YouTube and look up Power Records Captain America, and they serialize this. And we always have a lot of fun about the Adhesive X.
It's kind of crazy that that Kickstarter was like a Tower Record, the mind management thing.
Yeah. And it came, except that one came as a little 45. And
yeah.
Tower Record, the full size. And then, okay, I wasn't going to do it because it was too much money. But I went to dinner, and at dinner we started talking about back issues and how the prices go up. And so I did it. I bought Strange Tales 123 and Strange Tales 141. 123, First Beetle, that was $20. Now, I had to go to, like, Red Hood Comics because they had, they're the only ones that had copies of this, these books, because they had a lot of Silver Age, just racks and racks. So they had multiple versions of both these books. I went for the 2.0. They grade their own, and both Bob and Sean thought that was a pretty fair grading. And I figured $20 for a 2.0, give or take a little, you know, that's a good book. I figured, eh, you know, it's a reader copy. $20 isn't too bad. It's got a decent cover. They had, like I said, a $40 one, but I didn't like it. The cover was pretty washed out. I guess it was technically a better grade, but for me, I like covers. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, there might be something else wrong with the comic, like the back cover or whatever. But if you get a nice presentation on the front cover, I'm like, I think a lot of people would go for something like that. Like, there's certain things that you want to see.
I agree. I feel like cover appeal is, like, even if the pages are really dim or the back cover's jacked up, I'm less interested. And then for the First Fixer, they have it as a 4.5, a very good, and that was $20. And that, again, they had a couple different, some cheaper, some more expensive. But I really liked, I thought this presented well. Like, it doesn't have a lot of excessive chipping. Because, for instance, that 1.8 that I got in an auction, a graded 1.8 Strange Tales 104. And that one has a lot of chipping on the edge. And the back has all this handwriting, like, looks like pencil marks. And just looks beat to the stuffing really beat out of it. But that's first appearance of Pastebot Pete, so it's going to command more money. Mainly, it's going to command more money because it's a fair amount older, too. That was 4 issues into the Torch run, so it's much more where these are a little bit later. The First Beetle, I think, might eventually be worth more. I don't know. I think that was, generally speaking, that was probably the most expensive out of all these. Although, I would imagine if you get a really high grade Avengers 21, that could be expensive too.
Yeah.
But that one, I got one that had good cover appeal. Again, I could have upgraded, but I'm like, this looks, I would put it in on that good, very good range. I'm no expert at grading. But yeah, so I thought for like one day at a show to pick up 5 of the first appearances was pretty good.
I know, I was amazed. I'm like, wow, you're really running around that show.
And also, this was, this isn't, like I said, it's not a huge show. This isn't WonderCon or anything like that. Like, this is a mostly local show, like I said, with a couple of names. So I was very pleased. But WonderCon, I think I'll be able to land the elusive Melissa one. So when we get off mic, you'll have to tell me what other proper first appearances, if we're not. Because, again, we at dinner got into the whole, how come Hulk 180 isn't the first appearance of Wolverine? Which I think is one you and I have had. And why isn't it
Hulk 180? Yeah, I've sold a 180.
Because that's his first appearance. You know? But it's the value, the price on 180 is nowhere near what 180, at least it used to be that 181 was the pricey book.
It's so funny because it almost has like all the stuff you need for it to actually be a first appearance. And some people still say it's the first appearance. And then they say, but the first full is the issue after. And I'm like, it's like they're trying to say there's two first appearances.
But, well, that's what people want, are first appearances. Right?
But it's like 181 has the cover and a full story. So it's like, how are you going to be like, realistically, like that's the one you're going to want.
Yes. And that was Sean actually talked a lot about how he thinks covers really help too. Like if it's a cover featuring that character and doing everything, it'll help push the book a little bit more than if it's some boring cover or a cover focused not on that character.
Yeah, what do you
focus on a different character?
What do you feel about like if the character is not on the cover, but then there's like some rare variant cover where like the character's on like that cover until they get a regular cover?
I feel, I don't know, like these are all silly, almost silly issues. Certainly like the Captain America, it's, you know, it's not, she's not part of this at all.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, the Zemo, even though he's in his hidden identity, he is right on the cover, and the Beatles right on the cover. Now, the Fixer, it's Nick Fury on the cover instead. But Atlas is right on the cover of it. I mean, he's called Power Man back then, but he is central introducing Power Man. Who is he? Like, he's the prime character on that one. So I really thought that was a sharp looking thing too. So yeah, it's a weird mix, and obviously this is pre-variant covers. I don't know when that started, but...
Well, you have those, before the variant covers, you have those weird, like, different pricing.
Like newsstand or something versus
market. You start getting weird stuff like that to spike prices. And then, I guess, there's some people that want, like, the next thing where it's like, oh, the newsstand is disappearing. Or it's like, oh, it's from Australia. Or, like... I guess there's always another rare thing for you to try to hunt after you completed one thing, right? There's always something else.
Oh, yeah. I was talking to a guy, and he was talking about he had this narrow window, but he was trying to get a copy of every printing, too.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Especially if for something like a trade paperback. Like, oh, if no, you were doing it with something like that, you're like, oh, I got to get... like 10 printings of this.
No, these are floppies.
Oh, okay.
But still, to get a lot of these, you know, especially it was like an era of X books and mutant books, and I'm like, there were quite a few printings you're looking for, and that whole newsstand versus direct market, and there are a lot of interesting permutations. But for me, I just always put in a self-imposed barrier. I never like paying a lot for back issues. I think $30 is the most I've ever paid. So I kind of broke down a little bit, and I'm like, am I going to become that guy who, because I know a whole bunch of people that don't read new comics anymore. They just collect whatever their thing. Oftentimes it's Silver Age, but there's a few that do kind of the bronze or like a particular title or creator or whatever, and that's all they do. I'm like, I don't want to move to be one of those guys. But I also understand from a space perspective and manageability, like the thought of having millions of different... I mean, I'm always giving books away just to keep room down and keep space. And I know you've sold your books, which I think is a smart way to keep your collection kind of focused. I think there's some I'll always try and keep. I don't know.
Yeah, sometimes. Well, who was it? Was it Chris Campbell maybe that was saying he pulls, like he was talking about his trade paperback shelf. Like he would pull a trade paperback off the shelf. He would look at it, see if he feels something, and if he doesn't, then he knows he can sell it. Like I kind of do that somewhat with my issues since I have so many things. It was like Sega number one, and I was like, do I really like have an attachment to this? And sometimes with indie books, it's easier because also I came to them later, so there's not like that. Like I didn't start reading like a 3 years old comics or anything, so I don't have that. But still, I came early enough where there's some form of attachment to some stuff. So I look at some of the books. I'm like, would I really want to keep this type of thing?
Also, with a lot of particularly indie books, a lot of them just kind of end without ending. They just stop getting printed. It's not like it's a modern days are smarter, and I think they go intentionally and be like, we're going to do 10 issues or 20 or 50 or whatever. But I know a lot of the old series, they just sort of stop for whatever reason. The market crashes, the creator leaves, the publisher goes out of business. Or
it was kind of the Wild West. And you might have a company that's publishing your book, but it seems like there was less planning. And since it's indie comics, you can do whatever you want. There's no schedule. And then at some point, people are like, you know, it'd be really good if we had a schedule so that things actually came out and everything. Even if they're on, like, an extended schedule, like, at least you know there's some forethought into this.
I agree, but I don't. I also now I'm at a point where there's just so many comics, it's easier for me to be like, am I really going to sit and reread this run? And if I am I going to reread it?
Yeah.
Am I going to go pull the floppies out to reread it?
Guess what I just did?
What?
Exclusive, if anyone else is listening to this. You remember that series of The Killer from Arkeia?
Yes.
I bought, like, the 4 hardcovers. And I think I probably reviewed maybe Volume 4 or something on the show briefly. At some point in time. I don't know what episode that was. Maybe 2 years ago. But I kind of looked at them and I was just like, it's a fine series and everything. I have the whole thing. But I was just like, I don't... Like, the guy in there, he's a killer. He goes around, you know, he's a hitman. He murders people. And he has specific thoughts about capitalism or oil or whatever, right? And he's sort of narrating and doing his thing. So then I looked at all 4 volumes, and I'm like, you know, the first 2 are really the ones where I caught on to it. I'm going, this is cool. And then some other ones came up, and then I bought them, and I read them. They were fine. But I'm getting rid of volumes 3 and 4.
Oh, that makes sense.
So the next show, it's like they're going out there.
Also, trades, I feel, are easier to dispose of.
Yeah.
For various reasons. I don't know if that's true or not, but it just feels like a trade, even if it's of a bunch of issues people aren't as into or whatever, it's more easy sell than like, oh, here's some floppies. Because I think there's some people that just won't touch floppies, but you can always con someone into taking a trade.
Yeah.
Well, it's all collected right there, so it feels like it's easier to pick up as opposed to something where you're hunting and pecking to get whatever. And that's the other problem, is I oftentimes don't have every issue of whatever it is. So maybe I have a run of like 8 or 7 or 6, and then you have to decide where to cut, you know, unless it's a limited series. If you don't have them all, you're deciding to pick, oh, this is where I'm going to say this series cuts off or this series starts. But I just wanted to give a quick Long Beach Comic Expo. Like I said, over Labor Day, they're doing a 3-day show, the main show. So that's going to be a lot of fun, and I will definitely be going to that. I still have my lifetime pass.
That's good.
Kevin, do you have any upcoming shows you want to announce, or are you keeping them secret?
Well, I don't want people to buy, like, all the Songbird appearances. in March. Like, I'll
well, you notice
I'll...
I didn't give the issue number.
Like, if I go to that show and then I see some guy with his arms full of like Songbird, I'm gonna be disappointed. And like TCAF started announcing like their guests, and it just looks like, again, like, just awesome lineup.
Well, if you're doing Songbird, it's gonna be Thunderbolts. No, it's gonna be Hulk 449, right? If you're doing, that's the first appearance of Songbird.
Well, Melissa.
But if you're doing Melissa, it's...
I'm trying to misdirect people, Andrew.
There's a huge run on it. I joked with the people I was with, and they mentioned that they've known some people trying corner markets, but it's such a non-first appearance. Like I said, unnamed, no dialogue. I don't think it would be as attractive a thing to corner, like, as opposed to something where there's more going on.
Yeah, I've heard of people like where they'll take some book, like, I don't know, like, say Casanova or something, and like they know that there's 10 CGC of like the first issue, so like they'll try to acquire all 10, so like they're the only one that has all copies graded.
And you can also put out warnings on eBay or something every time it comes up, and
yes,
jump on that.
Which is weird, but, you know, like, people buy single issues, like, multiple copies just to hoard them because they see it and they're like, for whatever reason, like, that was our first comic or whatever, and they just keep on buying it over and over again.
Well, there's nothing like that.
Yeah. So, guess what I watched two more episodes of, Andrew?
What?
Deadly Class.
Daredevil?
Daredevil.
Daredevil's pretty indie.
You mean the Golden Age Daredevil?
Yes.
So two more episodes and no mention of Ronald Reagan. This is starting to seem like something that like stuck out on the show, didn't stick out in the comics, and I'm just like, well, that's weird. Like, there's so many things you forget about a comic, right?
Yes, for sure.
So I'm just thinking, I think I was just crazy on that point. But I don't know how well you know certain issues of Deadly Class.
Not well at all. So I'm completely not watching the show, and I need to get into the book too. I know you and Phil talked about it, but
did you know that there was like some crazy drug issue when they go to Las Vegas?
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, it's about kids, like high school age kids, so there's got to be drugs.
Because I was just like, well, they're never going to be able to, like, really capture some of that stuff from the comics, right? So
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's on, like, a cable show, so they could do stuff.
It's always so difficult. I think this is probably my issue with some... comic adaptions too. Like, when you're reading the comic, like, the artist is bringing so much to the table, and if the story is just average, like, the artwork is elevating the story. But when you just see it as a TV series, if it's just filmed normally, it's you're removing a whole element, and now it just looks like you can just see the tropes and it's just standard, right? It's like there's no style to it. Like, you would have to do something special, and a lot of times there isn't anything special. It's just, oh, that was a good story. I'm like, yeah, that was a good story though, because of how it looked in the comic. When you strip other things away, it loses its uniqueness.
Do you feel like it's steeped in 80s tropes, I guess, or?
But this is
more superhero tropes.
There's a lot of stuff going on. But this is my roundabout way of saying they tried to duplicate, like, all that stuff. And it was kind of amazing. Because usually you don't see so much effort to do that.
But they have the comic book creators involved. So
I know.
It's not like they just sold it to some random... dude on the street who just wanted the name or whatever.
But aren't you used to seeing like someone's name, like executive producer, and then they just do like whatever?
Yes, but I mean, I feel like the way at least Rick Remender tweets about the show and promotes it, he has some kind of interest in getting people to watch it.
And it's probably the closest thing I've seen for it to be exactly like the comics, but not be exactly like the comics, like at the same time. Like, it's not, so far, it's not something that's totally new. Like, they didn't say, hey, we'll just get the essence of this and totally remix it. Like, it's not totally remixed. Well, but there's new stuff.
I think they have to. I don't think you can do the most faithful one I saw was probably the Zack Snyder Watchmen or like the Sin City, and they had to change stuff.
I was gonna say the Sin City is pretty close.
Yeah, but both those also, I think, as a result, feel a little almost pointless at times.
Yeah,
because if you're keeping it exactly the same, then why am I watching? You know, like, well,
that's how I feel a lot of like anime is. Like, they might cut scenes or everything, but like 85% is the same. So I'm like, it's the sameness quota is like so high that it's like you really don't like, yeah, the artwork's different and that might draw you in because it's animated. So sometimes I have issues sometimes with animation too, where it's more like the South Park or more like those old 60s Marvel cartoons where they're dragging things across the screen. Like, I can tell it's a still image and the camera's just going up and down an image. You're not, like, to save money, I guess. Like, why else would you do that? I just don't notice that in, like, regular animated stuff. But anyhow, I'm thinking getting off on a tangent. So, there's been segments that are, like, animated in, like, every episode of Deadly Class, but they, like, really went all out in, like, this Las Vegas episode, where they had different art styles, and then, or they even had, like, I imagine how Happy is, where, like, a character inserts itself into, like, the visual of the scene. So just this crazy stuff. And then when they're just filming it normally, like, they just go all out and try to show is crazy, like how someone, like all the crazy drug stuff. And while it's
so, that is the animated, like traditional or computer animated, or when
it's a whole,
like, you notice it's clearly animated.
Yeah, like there's a whole bunch of different stuff. Like, it's hard to describe. I think there's a clip out there that shows you some of the stuff, but it wasn't just one style. Like, before it looked like Wes Craig style, and now this is just, it's like everything. It's just nuts. Like, I wonder if some people, like, you're probably, like, it's on Sci-Fi, so you're probably skewing to a certain audience anyways. And Deadly Class doesn't really have, like, it's not Sci-Fi or any of those things, but you're still skewing a certain direction. But I wonder if that would be a turnoff to some people. Like, I just want to see live people.
I think it's so ingrained anyways. Like, so much of even big movies is, it's computer animation or CGI, but I think people know on some level, and so there's just animation everywhere.
Like, I think less of a novelty now. Like, it used to be like, oh, Fringe, we're going to do one episode where it's like, oh, it's computerized or something, but it seems to be like part of the show. And good reasons for doing certain things.
Hey, it makes sense. It gives you a different feel.
So I just thought that was really neat in my journey through the show.
Cool. Yeah, maybe I'm sure Sci-Fi will do a marathon or something. Maybe I will end up checking out. I don't know. There's just too much TV, so.
There is.
I'm on a limit of how much I watch anyways, and I'm behind on all kinds of shows, so hard to keep up.
Like I know the Umbrella Academy, it doesn't have, like, I haven't watched it yet, but it doesn't have, like, them fighting the Eiffel Tower or like crazy, you know, out there stuff like that. Like, that's where if you had an anime sequence, you could have pulled that off. Or if you had a movie, I imagine.
I mean, I added it to my Netflix queue, but I just, it's going to have to be so different from the comic because the visual stylized nature of it is such a important part, and I don't see how you live action that at all. I mean, it would have to be 90% CGI, like a big budget movie, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To just have the look and the flow and everything, but I'm still excited. Look, it'll just be something different, but maybe by the time I get to it, it'll probably be 6 years from now.
Yeah, it'll be an essence show. Did they capture the essence of everything? But I find it's interesting. We got a lot of different versions from like one end of the scale. And usually when you go too far to one end of the scale, like you and it's like nothing like the material you're adapting, like usually you lose yourself and it's also not a good show. And then you have the totally to the other end where you're just doing too much. So Deadly Class is straddling an interesting line.
Yes, I believe that. I'm glad you like it. Sounds good. I think our listeners should tune into it if you feel like watching your comics instead of reading them. Have we picked up catchphrases to end our show, Kevin?
No. I don't think so. I only know catchphrases from other shows.
We're so unoriginal. We're so indie, we rip people off. What could be more indie than that, right?
I know. I saw something in the catalog, and I'm like, oh, I wonder if that's. It was like, what's that? Is that the Kramer's Urgot or something? And I'm like, oh, I wonder if this is going to have more characters urinating. I just remember seeing a preview years ago, and it stuck with me. And then I was listening to some interview recently with Jason Latour was on there, and he was talking about a dog urinating on one of the first pages of Southern Bastards. And I'm like, hey, that's the thing I talk about.
Hey, that's how you prove you're indie.
I know, right?
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in to this micro episode of Indie Comic Book Noise. Maybe we'll have a full one. We need to get Phil and Steve back in the fold. But thanks for listening and keep reading those independent comic books.
They're good for you.
Or watching them.
Read more comics. Later.
That's a good catch. Not that one. That's Steve's catchphrase. read more comics is a good catchphrase.
Yeah, I think that's from someone else. I also, if we can insert like something about Flash Gordon.